Mini episode 1679 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode 1679. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have with us here today one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my great pal, the scout, Ken Bex from firstdownscouting.com. That's 1stscouting.com. Here to just take a little bit of a look ahead. I wanted to do this. We don't often on the show do any type of NCAA conference championship weekend preview, but this is the last one as we know it. We've been saying all season long this is the last season. The way that it is, it'll be the last one ever in this format here with just four teams going to the playoff, which actually, again, this is the format I wanted all along, and so I'm sad to see it go. I thought, even back in the day when it was only two teams and everyone was like, we need a 16-team playoff, I'm like, no, four teams. I always thought this was the perfect balance. We're about to lose it right now, so in this last one here, this last little Auld Lang Syne, if you will, I bring in my great friend and great FDH Lounge dignitary, the scout Ken Bex. Ken, great to have you on for this, my friend. Nobody better to break down the last of a kind here with you.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on, and I tell you, I'm always delighted, man, whenever I talk some football with you, and we just happen to be recording it.
We just happen to be this time around. Yes, we've had any number of conversations that perhaps should have been taped. Some long ones actually come to mind, but you know, we
want matter of fact, just last night we went for 2 hours
when we were originally going to tape this, and then we ran out of time. I mean, it's just, that's bound to happen between me and you. That's as much as we love talking football. And I will say, I'm going to give a little bit of a teaser here, because you and I were doing enough of a breakdown on the Ohio State situation, being that it is, I think, one of the most intriguing situations in the country as far as a team that's really stepped on its own Johnson in big games, especially the last 3 years. We will be doing a detailed segment here once we get to the off season. We will be kind of breaking it down and giving our thoughts on everything, so we'll get to that then. But taking just kind of a little bit of a look here at the conference championship games this weekend, as far as the major conferences go, chronologically, the first one is going to be Friday night here, December 1st, coming up. Number 6, Oregon, and number 4, Washington. The present line as of this moment here is Oregon minus 9.5, which is a little jarring for a team that actually lost the last matchup between the teams, albeit it was a great back-and-forth matchup on October 14th. Washington has won the last two matchups between the teams, Oregon taking the previous three matchups. Oregon leads the all-time series 55-44-4. It's a thing where, again, Bo Nix has been the quarterback of the two that has come into this, I think, with greater momentum. He's the one that is still thought to have a great chance at the Heisman if it breaks down that way. But two very, very supremely talented teams here. And this is one of these things, Ken, where for all of the assumption that everybody's having in the Big Ten, now that they're doing away with divisions, which we'll get to later, like, oh, Ohio State and Michigan, they'll just be playing the week after all the time. Not necessarily. Wouldn't be the case if the Big Ten had expanded this year, because it would be Michigan and Washington in that game there. So both of these teams are good enough, clearly, to be playing in the Big Ten championship game next year.
Absolutely. I'm definitely looking forward to watching this game. As I mentioned to you the other day, I haven't been able to watch as much of the college football as I've liked, but I'll tell you what, this will definitely get me on fast forward, being able to watch two of these quality teams that's been throughout the year and highly ranked. And I'm looking forward to watching Bo Nix, especially since he left Auburn, he's definitely took his game to another level, and there's a reason that he's up for the Heisman. And then, of course, on the other end, you got another Heisman candidate for Washington at quarterback that used to be a former Big Ten guy at Indiana.
Yes.
And both of these guys have stepped their game up, and boy, this should be exciting. I'm here to think that that 9-point spread is somewhat perplexing to me, because I know it should be a high scoring game, at least looking from the side of Washington. Their defense, I know, at times tends to give up a lot of points. So Bo Nix should definitely be putting up some points and some touchdowns and raising his Heisman candidacy. And Oregon, you know, is a little bit more stingy on the defense. But, hey, you know how it is. The games are played on the field, not on paper.
That's right, Ken. I think you put your finger on it. I think that line is what it is, because everybody is anticipating that Washington is going to be easier to score on of the two teams. But again, for what it's worth, and it was back and forth, but they won the last meeting 36-33 in October. And then, of course, last year 37-34 against Oregon. So it's not like they can't win the shootouts in these games. So I think we'll be in for another treat. I think we both certainly agree on that one. And when you get to Saturday, the Big 12 championship game here, again, the non-divisional format, so matching up the top two teams in the conference, noon Eastern time, kickoff number 20, Oklahoma State against number 7, Texas. And this is one where the present line is Texas minus 14.5. And again, this matchup here, this is a thing where finally, Texas, I mean, aside from the letdown against Oklahoma, but finally they appear to have been achieving up to the level of their talent, which they have not really been doing in recent years. That's been an issue, but clearly the best season they've had under Sarkisian since he's been there. They're going to be going up against a little bit of recent history, though, because Oklahoma State beat them last year and beat them in 2021, Texas taking the two matchups before that. The last two games were relatively close, about a touchdown in both instances. So it is something where, you know, Gundy's squad does have the capacity to come out here and pull off what would definitely be an upset. But it would be something, if it happened, that would be sort of par for the course for the Big 12 in recent years, because Texas needs a few other things to happen in order for them to make the playoff. But of the two teams, they're the only ones that can make the playoff. We're not into next year yet, where all the conference champions automatically make it and also automatically get a bye, by the way. For Texas, they're the only one of the two that can make the playoff, and they need a decent amount of help. But it would be par for the course if it didn't happen here, because the Big 12 and the Pac-12 have been in the business of cannibalizing each other in recent years. Now, the winner of Oregon-Washington seems likely to make the playoff. If it's Washington, they'll definitely be in. As I keep saying, Texas needs a lot of help. But based on recent history, you've got to like Oklahoma State, because it's always somebody else playing spoiler in the mix here.
You know, as soon as you said that, I started laughing inside, because the spoiler is definitely on the alert on this game. Texas seems to be the obvious team to go with here, with Sarkisian and of course, the former Ohio State quarterback, now Quinn Ewers, who at one time was up for the Heisman, and we're speculating whether he'll come out for the draft this year or next year, which that's a whole other topic we could talk about, because that could definitely change the quarterback roster over at Texas, depending on what Ewers does, if he declares for the draft this year or not. As everybody knows, Mr. Manning, the young son of which was Manning, is it?
Cooper Manning.
Right. His son's there. And then, of course, they got the the other backup. I can't think of Malik Murphy.
Yes.
And he's a highly rated guy with a lot of skills coming. So, yeah, look at the portal, and depending on what happens after this game, definitely keep an eye on what's going on as far as that. But getting back to the game, Yeah, Quinn Ewers, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what he's going to do. And it might have a big determination of whether he's going to go into the draft this year, depending on how he does. But I'm looking for him to put up some nice numbers. Oklahoma State is not quite the team that we used to think back, even 10 years ago with Mike Gundy. But like you said, this is a bowl game, so anything can happen. Turnovers, you name it. And Mike Gundy has been in the big games and has come up, victorious many times. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they have and what they can bring against Texas.
Well, what it's going to take is probably an incredible game, which I think is certainly possible from Ollie Gordon, who's got 20 touchdowns this year and 1,580 rushing yards. So very, very possible there. But you got to limit the damage at the quarterback situation. Alan Bowman, 10 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. So that's a thing where you got to be getting the best possible version of that guy. Ollie Gordon runs wild, and you get a couple other things to go your way. And yeah, maybe Oklahoma State can do what teams have done in this situation in the past. It is hilarious that last year Kansas State played spoiler in this situation, but it wasn't enough to keep TCU out of the playoffs, as we saw. But typically, more often than not, it has resulted in teams missing the playoffs when that has happened. But you've got a situation here where the team that is higher ranked in this next game, I find it hard to believe they're not going to be in the playoff no matter what. The two-time defending national champion Georgia Bulldogs, number one ranked, playing number eight, Alabama, in the SEC championship game. And this is one of these things where when I was looking at this, it's one of those things where as much as I like the joke about the government implanting false memories in our heads, it's a thing where I think we all have this whole thing of like, oh, Georgia's really owned the crap out of Alabama the last couple of years, and they've won most of the last couple games. No. We tend to forget. Alabama didn't even make the SEC championship game a year ago. Georgia played LSU and got through that game. And then, of course, Georgia won the playoff without having to face Alabama. Georgia did beat Alabama the last time they played them in the national championship game in January of 22. But Alabama had taken the last several matchups before that, including the 2021 SEC championship game. So as much as we tend to think of it, and I certainly tend to think of it, that Georgia has taken the torch from Alabama as the face of the SEC right now, and they're actually favored by 6.5 in this game. And again, I do like Georgia to come through this game here. I think that as much if they've been a little bit off from where they were the last 2 years, I don't know that it's enough that the rest of the field can catch them. And Alabama certainly doesn't necessarily look like where they were a year or certainly 2 years ago. But this is a game where, again, Georgia's only won the last game between them. But again, over the course of the last 2 years, they've definitely been the better program. And this third year in a row, I look for that to extend.
Yeah, for me, this is one of the more intriguing games, coming up in the bowl season, because in my eyes, you know, once again, it comes down a lot of times turnovers in these games, because despite, you know, Georgia being ranked number one, I believe Alabama's number nine. The talent disparity, the disparity is not that big. Matter of fact, Alabama, if you go by the rankings, has more talent. Now, a lot of this is going to come down to the quarterback, of course, Jalen Milroe. Now, he was a guy in the beginning of the year, they actually benched, I think, two, three games into the season.
Right.
And then he bounced back. I'll give him a lot of credit. Bounced back both in the air and on the ground. So a lot of these teams, no matter who they are, have issues against mobile quarterbacks. So if there's going to be a possible upset, this could be the one. Because as far as Milroe goes, he's very efficient both on the ground and in the passing game. And, you know, one guy he reminds me of, you know, with my background with the evaluation part of it, I would almost say like a Michael Vickish type of guy.
Okay.
Very explosive once he gets into the open field. Has an explosion off his wrist when he throws. So one of his receivers I'm high on, too, is Jermaine Burton. Mm-hmm. So he's an exciting guy that can take it to the house, too. So Definitely looking forward to that on this Alabama side. And, of course, you know, you got the tight end over there, Brock Bowers, who everybody's touting as a top 10 type draft pick, which is saying something for a tight end. And he does have the numbers and the game film to prove it. He was down for a while for Georgia. And as soon as he came back, he showed why he's ranked as a top tight end in the nation and coming into the draft. So, you know, this is one of the kind where you pop the popcorn, sit back, and really enjoy this game.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bowers is definitely one of these guys that profiles as a Kelce/Gronk type guy at the next level. Now, whether he'll be as colorful as those two guys, I don't know. But he certainly looks to – he profiles in terms of the talent. And then Alabama with the competent, I would say, rushing attack of Jace McClellan, which I have to say, like – that just, as far as how it rolls off the tongue, isn't that the most SEC sounding name you've ever heard, Jace McClellan?
I'll have to agree with you on that one.
Like a computer could have generated that name. You know, if you'd gone into ChatGPT, give me the most SEC sounding name of all time. But you know, it's going to be an interesting game, like you said. The talent disparity is not really there because again, they've been at the top of the standings. They've been 1-2 in a lot of the polls the last couple of years as far as the recruiting goes. So both of them with that ultra, uber talented roster top to bottom. And the only thing we know for sure is that all of the studs on the Georgia Bulldogs defensive unit will be drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. We do know that that will happen, so we can look for them in Eagle colors the next couple of years. As that trend looks to continue, but should be a great SEC championship game. The next game, I think, has a chance to be very competitive as well, not necessarily for the reasons that you might like to see from a competitive standpoint. Number 10, Louisville against number 5, Florida in the ACC championship game, and what I'm speaking of course, is Florida State being down to their backup quarterback. That's the reason they're only favored by 2.5 points, notwithstanding coming into the game undefeated. So you don't like to see that. It'd be nice if these teams were both at full throttle for this game here, but that is not the case. Florida State has been able to get by the last couple of weeks here with their backup. They won the most recent game in the series against Louisville. Last season, Louisville took the two games prior to that, 2021 and 2022, Florida State winning in 19 and 18. So it's gone back and forth, but this is the season really where I think it became clear Florida State started to turn the corner in 2022, but in 2023, I mean, top to bottom, the Seminoles look like they're back. And that's the reason that I think that, again, they're still favored, notwithstanding being down to their backup quarterback. This is a team that has come out, and for all the people that were wondering, are they ever going to get back to where they were under Jimbo Fisher? They have, Ken.
Oh, no question about it. You know, the one thing I would say, like you were mentioning it with Florida State, it really does put a sour note on the game that, you know, their quarterback, who was also in the Heisman running, is out for this game. Mm-hmm. But they do have, you know, some talent on the offensive side, and especially on the wide receiver core with Keon Coleman, who happened to be a Big Ten guy just last year, transferring from Michigan State, a big guy with good athleticism, and that the NFL is really looking forward to, along with Johnny Wilson. I believe it's 6'7", big guy, another talented guy. So you know, at least the quarterback coming in, who I believe is Roadmaker, will have some definite targets to look at. And on the defensive side, they have Jared Versace, I think it is.
Yes.
And he's another highly rated guy that should be a top 10, 15 type of guy, a defensive end that they're going to be looking forward to grabbing at the NFL level. So definitely on the Florida State side, there's definitely talent. But with that quarterback situation, that definitely gives Louisville a chance.
It does, and that's, again, that's the reason that the line is inside of a field goal and should be super competitive. There's no way humanly possible for us to say that out of the major conferences that we save the best for last, Because it turns out to be the worst for last, ladies and gentlemen. It's number 3, Michigan, against number 17, Iowa. It's the last time that anybody from the kids' table gets invited into the Big Ten championship game because, again, they're doing away with divisions next year. So Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska, nice knowing you. You will never, ever again be in the Big Ten championship game because it will be basically two from... what? USC, Oregon, Washington, Ohio State, and Michigan.
Now, wait a second, though, Rick. If they combine all those teams and make one roster, I think they got a shot.
Yeah, if you took the rest of the conference, top to bottom, combined them, and played them against the other five, yes, I think they'd be quite competitive. But alas, Iowa is left to do this one on their own. And and this is one of these things here, too. I mean, for as much of a punchline as the Western Division is, the fact that the offensive coordinator, a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, the coach's son, Ference, has already been canned as offensive coordinator. He won't be serving in the job past this season. And in looking at this here on the great... statistical breakdowns that you get. Let me give a shout out here to sports-reference.com. Looking at this, the receiving leader for Iowa, tight end Eric Ali, 21 receptions, 299 yards, 3 touchdowns. That kind of says it all, and that is why Iowa is a 22.5-point underdog as we speak. And this is one of these things where, again, you could look at it that Michigan could be coming off of, you could say maybe a little bit of a letdown. They know this is a game that they're going to win. It could be a situation very well where they come out and they win but don't necessarily cover. I don't think that'll be the case because right. I think it's one of these things where we've seen enough of this, especially like in the NFL, like in recent games. As I'm watching my fish against the Jets on Black Friday, and the Jets just, like, they couldn't move the football. If you handed them an Uzi, they wouldn't be able to move the football, okay?
You say they still wouldn't be able to spray it.
Still wouldn't be able to move the football, yes. And, like, the New England and New York Giants game the other day, again, such futility back and forth. So it's like we've seen in relatively high-profile situations here, whether it be a game in the NFL or games in college, of where when a team just is unable to move the ball, you look at this, and I cannot picture Iowa being able to move the ball against Michigan when Ohio State, who is infinitely more talented and better coached, whatever the limitations are of Ohio State in big games, infinitely better coached offensively than Iowa. Again, I don't see this one being even close, and there has been a tendency in recent years for Big Ten championship games that looked like blowouts to actually be blowouts. And I think this is how we close out this era of the Big Ten in exactly the same way.
Yeah, unlike the SEC conference championship with Georgia and Alabama, and I told you to pop the popcorn and sit back and take it all in, this might be one of those kind of games, if you got something going on, go take care of whatever you got to go take care of and get back for the real cooking later.
Yes.
But, you know, as far as as far as Michigan goes, they do have some, you know, highlighted players at national, like J.J. McCarthy,
yeah.
You know, Blake Corum at the running back spot, along with Donovan Edwards. Now, I will say they have somewhat underproduced, as we had predicted before the beginning of the season, but at the end of the day, the talent disparity is so great that even a few turnovers may not make a difference in this game, and so... Yeah, I just, you know, if you love football and you want to watch something, then you can turn the tube on and check it out. Other than that, or unless you're evaluating for some prospects or something, you might want to wait for a later time and look at something else.
Yeah, exactly. And this is going to be one of these things where in generations to come, in places like Iowa and Nebraska and other places like that, it's going to be fathers saying to their sons and grandfathers, like, you know, Sonny, there was a time when our school had a possibility of being in the Big Ten championship game. No way, Grandpa. No way. No, the system was different then, and we didn't have as many teams at the top, admittedly. So, yeah, so when we talk about the end of an era in college football, it's the end of the four-team playoff. It goes to 12 teams next year. Nobody better exemplifies the end of an era than the Iowa Hawkeyes, because it's the last time they'll come close to sniffing a Big Ten championship game. They'll be routinely eliminated from consideration by mid-October every year after this one, as will everybody else in the presently constituted Big Ten West Division. And again, you know, USC, Oregon, Washington, Michigan, Ohio State. Pick two out of the five. Notice I didn't mention Penn State in there because they no longer merit consideration along those lines. James Franklin just is not getting it done at the same level as that. Boy, if it wasn't, James Franklin is the happiest guy in the world that Michigan State has fallen so much further on their face because he can say at least we're not those guys. But, yeah, this game here, Ken, this is the poster child game for the end of an era to me.
Well, you know, speaking of an end of an era, another thing I'm looking at, you know, because this today, they came out with the Big Ten, you know, all Big Ten team. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking about, like, teams like Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern, so on and so forth. Who's going to be named on the all Big Ten team from them teams? I mean, when you got Oregon, USC, and teams like that joining the Big Ten,
yeah.
I mean, you, no longer are you going to see Michigan and Ohio State, you know, bombarding the all Big Ten team either. So, you know, these teams are, you know, to make the Big Ten all conference team, it's going to be stacked. I mean, and so it's going to be an honor to be on there anymore.
Absolutely. And a school we haven't even mentioned, UCLA. I mean, I would probably put outside of those five teams. I mean, you could make an excellent argument that UCLA is going to be the sixth best program in the conference coming in here. I think it's going to be a fight between UCLA, Penn State, maybe depending on what they're able to get going at Wisconsin, maybe. But I mean, that remains to be seen as far as what Fickell's going to be able to do there. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be a new world next year. And again, to recap, it'll be a situation from here on in, conference champions will be getting a bye in the playoffs, or the top four conference champions anyways, but it's going to be redundant based on the fact that next year the Pac-12 is going to consist of Washington State and Oregon State. And next year, Ken, there will be that one Pac-12 conference game to be played during the season. Oh, well, this is...
You know, I got to say, if we're back to the future, mm-hmm. think about that one. So if it was the Big Ten was this year, uh-huh. with all those teams there right now, who would be the all-conference quarterback?
Wow. That's a heck of a thing.
I mean, yeah. I come to say I don't think it would be J.J. McCarthy.
No. I mean, it would be between Nix and Williams, basically. But, yeah, I mean, that's a close one. And Williams, just the fact that he's not up for the Heisman in terms of consideration, and yet he's the overwhelming choice to be number one in the draft next year, that's one of those things where it's so hard to win it 2 years in a row. And, like, perceptually, like, the deck is stacked against you, that you have to be better the next year than you were the year before. Because I can't tell you any number of times over the years. So my dad, who's an alum of Ohio State, his all-time favorite player is Archie Griffin, the only guy ever to win two Heisman trophies. So whenever anybody wins the Heisman as a freshman, sophomore, or junior. Now, if they're a junior, they're probably going pro anyways. But freshman or sophomore, I'm always holding my breath. But it never happens. It never
happens. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like the Miami team that went undefeated, the Dolphins. They're holding their breath halfway through the season.
That's right. That's right. A team that I revere, the perfect team, the Dolphins from 72. Everybody likes to crap on them and say that they never played any competition. I love it. I love the fact they do a champagne toast every year when the best team loses. I love it. As a guy who's always had a soft spot in my heart for the Dolphins, I'm certainly happy for them every year when that happens, and I hope nobody ever approaches that mark again except for the Dolphins. That would be pretty exciting.
And in defense, Rick, you know, if you look at that roster, they did have a stacked roster. So absolutely. It's not like they just happen to, you know, luck up and go undefeated.
Oh, yeah. My homie Bob Greasy, the most slept-on player probably in NFL history, Again, that was a really great boy. The World Football League, what that did to them in the mid 70s here, because I mean that was a team that was still very good going into the late 70s. They were still a playoff contender in those years, but they weren't what they were once the WFL picked them over. And so that was an example then, one of the times that we saw in the sports world, because again in the 60s and 70s, whether it be the AFL, NFL, ABA, NBA, the World Football League coming along, you would still see that with the USFL into 83. That was an era where you had a lot of these things happening on the sports business side of things. And then I think it really started in college football, I think about 30 years ago in the early 90s with the expansion of the SEC. And a past lounge guest, actually, Harvey Schiller, he was the SEC commissioner at the time when the SEC started. They really kicked this whole thing off here with the expansion and bringing in some of the teams that they did in what would now become the Western Division of the conference. And it kind of brings us to where we are now, of where what they started to do 30 years ago reaches full throttle next year when it's Oklahoma and Texas coming in. Again, the Big Ten, as we said, responded in its own way. They are the two big conferences, the two big power conferences from here on in. The Big 12 basically survived by digesting a lot of the remains of the Pac-12. So you could say arguably they're number three. The SEC maybe number three. It tickles me no end that Stanford will now be playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I mean, that is one of the greatest things I've ever heard.
Well, you know, was you bringing up Bob Greasy, that a name that came out of my mind that I always loved, I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but I would always love to have as my quarterback, is Phil Sims.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't what you would call like the greatest athlete, but he was more than proficient.
Yeah.
He threw a good pass, and he was always like a good field general, you know?
Ken, this is why you're the scout, buddy, because I never thought of that before, but I think you came up with the perfect comp right there. If you're looking for a comp for Bob Greasy or a comp for Phil Sims, it's each other. I think you just nailed it.
Yeah,
good job,
yeah,
buddy. Yeah, I mean, they're the same kind of guy. I mean, Greasy was a guy that had, you know, some surprising mobility there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he wasn't Steve Young, but he could move his feet a little bit.
Right.
He could get around a little bit. He wasn't Tarkenton, but he could move. So, yeah, I mean, that is that's a great comparison on your part. And that's why we love always chopping it up with you. And, again, I can't recommend enough that people check out your work at firstdownscouting.com, the number one, stscouting.com. Also on the old social medias here, you are the guy who, again, you watch just about more football and analyze it just about than anybody I know, and it always comes through when we're talking to you here on the show, my man.
Well, I love eating it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and one thing on Greasy and Sims, I would say they'd be great under the cap.
Oh, yeah.
Figures would be excellent.
Yes, yes, they would, and they would be unselfish guys that would be letting the rest of the team get over here. I must say that in both cases, here's another commonality. I'm going to find another commonality. In both cases, I don't feel, with all due respect, that the football acumen traveled to the next generation quite as much with Brian Greasy and Chris Sims.
Well, put it this way. They're better sportscasters than they were players. How about that?
Well, that too. Yeah. Although that's not saying much. That's really not saying
that's why I was trying to be gracious. It is the holidays, you know.
It is the holidays. And again, a great season for watching football. We're going to know what the bowl matchups and playoff matchups are going to be after this Sunday. And of course, you know, you and I will both be getting out the box of popcorn here and watching that as they make the announcement on Sunday, and it may or may not be complicated or controversial based on what shakes out on Saturday. But I knew it would be just an absolutely outstanding preview with you here, my man, and I can't thank you enough for being here. The Scout Ken Bex from firstdownscouting.com, the number one, stscouting.com. Ken, thank you so much, my man, and I look forward to getting you back on soon here to talk some more football.
And as always, man, I appreciate it and looking forward to it. Have a great one, Rick.
Thank you, my friend. You do the same. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1679.